bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, I'm Ewan Rankin, and I'm here to talk the week's photography news and answer your questions on the subject. If you'd like to send us a question, you can always send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll answer it. Yes, we, as in me. On my own again. I'm enjoying this. I really am enjoying it. This is the way the show should always have been done, I reckon. There we go. We've had a letter, though, to start us off from Nick Latey. Thanks very much, mate, or Latte. Thanks very much for sending it in. Do you remember the Nikon issue with Dennis's lug a few weeks ago? And my first thought was it was the blade control from, like I used to have on an old Pentax lens. And then I went on something else. Well, it turns out I might have been right. Nick says, Dear Ewan, can't seem to get the video to play, so I'm assuming that we're talking about the same lug. But I looked at my D5100 and thought, that's to do with the aperture. Everyone knows that. Then I thought a little because I know that from my fiddling with my Pentax ME Super, my first SLR about 30 years ago, and perhaps doesn't know that. And perhaps everyone doesn't know that, sorry. If you get an old manual lens, I've got a Tamron SP90, which uses my Nikon, which I use with my Nikon in front of me, and change the aperture ring, the leaves of the iris type mechanism move to the appropriate aperture set by the aperture ring. So, to set to 32, and you get a small-sized aperture, now trip the corresponding lug on the lens and the leaves open fully. It's on a spring, and I always presume with my ME Super lug that the lug contact was pressurizing the spring and keeping the aperture open until you hit the shutter release. The shutter release, as well as getting the mirror out of the way and moving the blades to expose the film on my ME Super, also briefly lets the lug-to-lug contact release the pressure on the spring-loaded mechanism that allows the leaves of the aperture to briefly adapt the size of the aperture set on the ring. Basically, you get as much light as possible through the viewfinder all the time until you press the shutter release. My Nikon D70 had a button showing you the depth of field before firing the shutter, which I always presumed also released this lug-lug pressure, thus letting the aperture iris take up its appropriate size without firing the shutter release. I have to say, I've worked this out 30 years ago, and I could, of course, be wrong playing about, but I might be talking about the wrong lug. However, if you've only modern lenses with no mechanical aperture ring, no amount of playing is going to help you. Love the show. You do a sound, if a little bit lonely, job at the moment. My dad lives in Solihull and I went to a prep school there called Eversfield. I'm 53 though now. Anyway, I might well try and get to the British Tech Bash. Yours we go, Nick Latey. Thanks, mate. The blades are controlled with that lug on the side, but there's a corresponding lug on the lens, which is what I always thought it was. And I think, as he says, it held it open so you could get the maximum light through to the viewfinder to try and understand what you were shooting. And then when you actually took the picture, that engaged to take the aperture down to the correct size. So I think we're right between us. I did start on that process, but then I went on something else I remember on the podcast. But I'm agreeing with Nick now. I did say a Pentax lens before, didn't I, as well? Lovely. The week in tech news. No, it's not. It's the week in photographic news. First one off is a wonderful prank that's being done by two magicians, a chap called Rahat Hussein and Jack Vale. They're two guys who go to the Hollywood Walk of Fame outside Grauman's Chinese Theatre and squat down so that people can take pictures of the stars and everything. Then they get someone to turn up with an iPhone, and they give them their iPhone and say, would you take a picture of me? And they squat down and put their arm around someone who isn't actually there. And the person takes a picture. Unfortunately for the person taking the picture, what appears on the screen is the picture with somebody there. I've got no idea how they managed to do it, but they think they're taking of a picture somewhere on their own, and then when the thing comes up, the picture that they get to see is of the imaginary friend, the magic camera. I saw that on Petapixel, and it's not exactly a news story for photography, but well done, because that had me tickled. That would be a fantastic wheeze to pull out on someone. Windrider in the chat says, that's what I said on the day. Yes, it is what you said on the day, mate, and I do agree with you. Well done, mate. Gotta love Wikipedia, says Ian. Tut, tut, tut. Going back to the Bash, actually, yes, the Bash tickets are on sale. If you'd like a Bash ticket, go to britishtechnetwork.com, and on there, there's a banner, and you can buy yourself a ticket for the Bash, which is 20 quid for the whole day. All your beer and food's included in that price. And there's a ticket there for the curry as well that you need to buy separately. That's a deposit for your curry. It's not paying for your curry. But that £10 will just make sure that we book the restaurant out and Milan doesn't lose out on any covers and that kind of stuff. But you'll get that £10 off your bill when you're finished. So it'll be credited to you when you get there. But there you go. British Tech Bash tickets are on sale. Go get them now. Mm-mm. Next bit of news. Amazon has released a lens finder process. Go on to amazon.com and or .co.uk and put in whatever you want, the make of your camera, what type of lens, and then it gives you the options to choose from. Once you've got that, it'll give you the various sellers and people that are available to send it to you, and you can buy it. It's a great idea. One of the things that I find, particularly when I'm looking for a specific lens, is it's great if you know the exact code of what you want, but if you've only got a rough idea of what the focal range is, or where you've got the, you know, the f-stop settings, a specialist, it can be difficult to find sometimes on Wex or other places. And you end up searching by price more than often, and high to low pricing is just a nasty way of looking for lenses on online. Well done, Amazon. I hope you sell more lenses because of it, because you deserve it. That's a good little system. I've had a quick play with it, and it's not bad at all. On to the product. Oh, but there's a rumour as well, by the way. And the rumour is that the new Google phone, when it comes out, the Nexus 5, this will please Sarah, is going to have a Nikon-branded camera module in it. Now, whether Nikon have anything to do with the development of it or all that kind of stuff, I don't know. It's only a rumour. But it's going to probably have the Nikon name behind it. They've all got Zeiss on them and stats and stuff for the lenses, so it doesn't mean anything. Moving on, Cyprus have created an application for iOS. Well, there's tons of photo applications out there, you might say, but this one is very, very good. What this is a DNG manufacturer. So it's £1.99 if you buy it in the UK store, £2.99 if you buy it in the US store. You put it on your iOS device, and it works with any iOS device that's got a camera in it. What it does is it takes a completely uncompressed image for you. So whatever your sensor receives, Cyprus will gather that information. It's not strictly raw, because it's not using proprietary format or anything like that, and the bit depth is not specified in the press release that I read. I'm presuming it's going to be 8-bit or maybe 12-bit, but effectively, what you end up having is a digital negative as a result. You will get a DNG format file that will come out from whatever you've shot. Obviously, this is going to increase the file size that you maintain within iOS. If you then want to tweet it out, or if you want to email it, or if you want to use it on Twitter or something like that, I'm not sure it'll let you do that. I haven't had a play for long enough because this only came out this morning. But I've downloaded it, and I'm going to have a play over the weekend, and I'll try and let you know next week. But it gives you full histogram, full exposure compensation, shutter speed adjustments as well, so you've got an editing possibility within here. And it'll also let you save it as a high-quality JPEG that you can select the quality of, or it'll let you output as an uncompressed TIFF as well, which is fantastic. For the $1.99, if it really is a decent quality DNG, I could see me using this an awful lot. Only question in my mind is how much it interacts with any of the other services. But I've got it down. I downloaded it immediately just before the show. I will go and have a play, and I'll let you know what I think. But it does look like it could be quite interesting. Well done, Cyprus. Now, the next thing is not a wind-up. It's a wind-up. Yes, the wind-up digital camera is upon us. This is the Sun and Cloud wind-up camera. And it's a camera that's digital, that's got a flash unit in it. Christ knows how long you have to wind to get the flash to go off. But it's got a small solar panel on it as well, which gathers sunlight. And it's got a crank on the side that you wind it up with. It's available in black or white, and any other colour that you want, as long as it's black or white. It's got a full list of controls. It's powered by its internal power source that you get from the crank. You don't need anything else. You don't need a charger. You're never going to be stuck for batteries and you're out in the wilds. There you go. It's got a 3 megapixel CMOS sensor in it, so it's not brilliant. An ISO range of 100 to 800, which is settable, capable of still and video, so it'll do AVI files up to 30 frames per second or an 8 frame per second version if you want, which might be quite arty in itself. And the data saved onto an SD or an SDHC card that you can get up to 16 gig capacity. If you stick anything bigger than that in there, it's not going to recognise it, unfortunately. Any colour you want if you're colourblind, says Adam. Absolutely. Survivalists will be after this one. No power outages. Excellent. 2 tickets for the bash, says Pearson. Good man. We're filling up already. This thing's pleasant. I think it looks a great idea. I mean, the pictures that they shoot with it are fairly basic and they're fairly grainy, it has to be said. And there's a whole pile of filters and stuff like that, which you can crap your image up with afterwards if you want. There is a USB port, which you can charge it with, but you're going to have a USB device or charger. It doesn't come with a charger on it, as a matter of course. Downside, you get it through a place called AC Gears at the moment online. The downside is it's $200. So it's not the cheapest camera you're ever going to get. It's a fair old size, I would guess. It depends how big the person's hands are in the image there. But I would say it's probably the size of a compact in terms of depth and maybe twice as tall. $200, what? Forget it, says Adam. Does look like fun, says Teresa. She likes it. Nice camera. Definitely go for one just for the sheer novelty factor, but not at $200, no. Maybe not for that amount. Oh, they're all running a mile now that $200 has been spoken of. Good grief. You cheapskates. Cheap, cheap, cheapskates. But there you go. That's it. It's the Sun and Cloud wind-up camera. You know you always wanted one, didn't you? On to the proper news then, the proper cameras. First things first, the EOS 700D is out there. This is a replacement for the 650D. Now, if you've got a 650D, that was only released 9 months ago. So I know Gordon Jackson wrote in last week and said that he got his 650D working, if you remember. So he bought that less than 9 months ago, and this is the direct replacement for the 650D. In America, it's going to be called the Rebel T5i. It's an 18 megapixel sensor hybrid. It's got the Digic 5 processor in it, 5 frames per second digital shooting, continuous shooting, advanced AF modules, 9 crosshair filters, sensors rather, and it's got a whole load of external controls on it, which give you the standard kind of image stuff that you'd expect from looking in on the camera. It's the normal kind of size. The name of the app that I mentioned, WinRider, was the Cypress Digital Negative. That's it. Just put in digital negative and it comes straight up in iOS. 3-inch very clear view LCD on the back with a touchscreen added onto it. And prices start at £629 or $749 for it. You can get it with a kit lens, the 18-55 3.5-56 ISSTM, and that is £759 or $899. For what it is, at that level of the camera, I mean, the 600D was an excellent camera, the 650D was excellent, but at that price, this is a hell of a hike up. This is $200, £200-ish more up than the 650 is currently retailing at. I haven't done a search to see if there's anywhere that's actually selling it yet. I don't think there is, because I don't think it's available now for another couple of weeks, but when Wex get hold of this, if that stays at that price, then I can't see this really selling that well. It doesn't look good enough to make up that kind of level, but it's much of a muchness. If it's, you know, it's filling the 650D. 650D was a great camera. 600D is a great camera. So we'll wait and see what the price is when it hits the market, but that could be a bit pricey at that kind of level. The other thing that's out there as well that's been released today is the Rebel SL1. This is the 100D. Same kind of idea. It's a DSLR from Canon. But this is slightly different in the aspect that they're trying to look at controlling the size of the Canon body. And they're trying to hit the compact market a little bit more, the system cameras with the interchangeable lenses. This takes all your standard Canon lenses. If you've got S lenses, because it's a digital setup, you're going to have loads of fun using those on it. If you've got your full frame lenses, you can still use those. Don't worry. It's got everything you'd expect, but the body's smaller. It's lighter. I'm going to suggest that probably the battery power is going to be down. It's got very much the same kind of specs as you've seen in the 700D there. APS-C DSLR sensor. It's the smallest APS-C sensor we've ever made. 18 megapixels, so they're not going stupid on the megapixelage. So that means that your individual sensors are going to be bigger, or the individual pixels are going to be bigger. Phase detection pixels are spread across 80% of the image's surface to provide increased AF speeds and tracking performance. So they're looking for live video with this one, most definitely. It'll record full HD. It'll record full HD movies, and it's available from the end of April with a standard retail price of, wait for it, £579 for body only, $649. So that's kind of about the right sort of price to replace the 600 650D. That might come down a bit more. If you could probably find this under £500, then I think they could absolutely make a killing with this. But it, with the kit lens, that's with the 18 to 55 EFS 3556 f-stop IS STM lens. That's going to top it off now at £709 or $799, which again, for the kit lens at 18-55, they're usually good. I mean, I know the STM stuff has got a good reputation as being more than adequate, but these are still cheap front lenses that are made out of plastic. You know, they're not the end of the world, but they certainly aren't the sky's the limit. If you want to get that at that price, then go for it. I think the body-only deal might not be bad, and if it's tiny, it's going to be great to for a budding amateur or someone, a college student or something like that, who's looking to use and buy some old lenses and then get into the market for something a bit better later on, perhaps, and set off down that Canon path. I'd buy one. I would buy one if the quality of the image was decent enough, particularly the video. Something smaller to carry around on days out. The idea here is that people are going to go for this compact market because it's dying, but whether the that Nikon 1 series or the the Lumix G3 series, G5 series are going to be hurt by this, I think it could be just a little bit pricey if they're really trying to hit that market. We'll have to wait and see. If you've got lenses, could be a good buy. Could be a real good buy. Fuji have released the Fuji film. Oh, that's the wrong picture. Fuji have released the Fuji film XP200. This is a ragtag, rough and tumble camera. It's got an interesting controls layout with the turn wheel on the side there, shutters on the top. It's got a little tiny flash that's looks like it's an LED flash as well in the center there. And it's waterproof to 50 feet and shockproof from 6 foot. Not bad at all. It's got a price of £229. So it's not the end of the world. And if it was good for a little kid's camera, perhaps, that's not the end of the world in terms of price for giving it to them as well. 28 to 140 equivalent millimeter lens. And it also offers 10 frames per second and continuous shooting at full resolution. That's not bad. Not bad at all. It's got a CMOS sensor and processor, and it can record full 1080i movies, though, not P movies, but it can go up to 60 frames a second, which is great for high-speed recording and slow motion and that kind of thing. If you take the resolution down, you can actually get up to 360 frames per second, it's saying, which is pretty good. Going on holiday soon, and you're going to do a bit of diving or something like that, this could be perfect, right up your street. Price is good though, $229, and if it can come out a little bit less than that when it hits the shops, good on it. Fujifilm have also released this thing. It is the Finepix 8400W. It's an interchangeable lens. It's a fixed lens camera. What am I talking about? It's powered by AA batteries though. That was a something that we talked about last week with the Fujifilm, wasn't it? That the AA batteries were a welcome addition. 16 megapixel BSI CMOS sensor. It's got Wi-Fi built in as well, and 44 times optical zoom. So that's taking it from 24 millimeters up to 1,056 millimetres. That's a lot. I mean, you're never going to hold 1,000 millimetres still handheld. Not a chance. It's got an aperture range of 2.9, which is a weird number, to 6.5, which is good at the top end at 1,000 millimetres. Not bad at all. It's got a very nice spec. It's 10 frames a second, up to 10 frames, and it shoots full HD video. The price for this beautifully gorgeous unit was listed, and now I can't find it. Bugger. Where's it gone? Oh, no, pricing's yet to be confirmed on this one. Sorry, my mistake. It's another one. Could do it. That's a lot of zoom. A lot of zoom. Yeah, chat room's going off on the zoom 44 times. Bloody hell, that looks huge. Looks like a Cree LED on the other camera, says Wind. That's what I thought, mate. Yeah. You're never going to hold it handheld. Probably that's going to get very soft from sort of 600 or 700 millimetres onwards, potentially. I'd love to get hold of it and have a play, but it's a bridge camera. And $350 US suppressed price, says Jason in Australia. There's no price on the press release that I've got. That could be about right, I suppose. Maybe a little bit pricey. I think for what you're talking about, though, I'd rather go for the if I've got £200 burning on my pocket, I'd rather go for the XP200 and give it to the kids as well. That's £600 here, says Ian. I think it's that bad. And the last offering we've got in all of the products is the Sigma. This is the DP3 Merrill. Now, if you want to buy this, the cheapest price you can get this at the moment is £800 at Wex Photographic. And this is quite interesting because if you were looking for a compact camera, this could be one of them. It is a compact camera. It's got a fixed lens, though. So that means you're not going to be doing interchangeable stuff. Well, that's all right, because that's what compact cameras do. No, this is a fixed lens. This is fixed at 50 millimeters for focal length. So you're not going to get anywhere with this. There's no rotation. There's no zoom. There's no nothing. It's got macro capability built in. If you want to change the focal length of what you're shooting at, the bad news is you have to buy another camera. Because they do, I think it's a DP2 and a DP1. The DP1 will give you, let's see if I get these the right way around. I'll probably get them wrong. The DP1 gives you 75 millimetres. Oh, no, that's the DP2. And the DP1 gives you 35 millimetres. There you go. What's interesting about it is it's 46 megapixels. It's got their Fovean X3 sensor. This is one I think we talked about the other week where we said, you know, multiple exposures and then it patches it together afterwards. It's a fixed aperture of 2.8, 3-inch screen on the back, and it completely supports RAW format and all that kind of stuff. It's a very high-end shooting camera. Now, if you look at the stuff that we looked at the last couple of weeks with the Nikon and the XP series from Fujifilm, then this is actually pretty competitively priced at that level. It's giving you a very big image with an awful lot of light gathering capability for low light, which is very good. It's coming in at £800. So it's beating the others that are out there that are trying to do the same kind of thing here. What you cannot get over is the fact that there's no interchange on the lenses and you're buying a fixed 50mm lens. Well, okay, good practice. You're giving it to a kid or something like that, or a student, you know, it's good to put on the fixed lenses. Don't get lazy and sit on your backside and use the zoom all the time. But that's an awful lot of an ask for the price that they're asking. If you told me that this was under £500 and doing that, maybe. I think at £799, I think that's £300 to £400 more overpriced than it should be. Yeah, chat room's agreeing with me on that one. The price is going up. Adam, oh, Sigma, you failed at that one again. You couldn't get a more bland camera if you tried. Vastly overpriced is the questions that are coming on. So, interesting, but a niche camera. Sneaker Zoom, says Teresa. Okay, I'll take that back. That could be the low light camera. Oh, that's the thing. That's the one thing that would be interesting is how it deals with low light. But you just would have thought that something a bit more imaginative in the lens wouldn't be much beyond the wit of them, would you? You could do it. Never mind. There you go. That was the product news of the week. If you've got any news that you want to release to us, if you've got any products you want us to review, send them through and we'll have a look at them. I'm going to have a go with Cypress DNG over the weekend and let you know what I think. But some of the pictures that were showing up on the story look pretty good. Not bad at all. Time for your questions. If you've got a question to send to us, then send it to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll read it out and we'll also answer it. If you'd like to give us a review, we don't get a lot of reviews on the photo show, but if you do send us a review, we'll read them out and we'll say whatever you think. Good or bad, you can say whatever you fancy. I will always be honest and open to constructive criticism. Absolutely. First question's from Adam. What are your opinions on more companies now seeming to lean towards the CSC range, the compact system cameras, that's CSC, with the likes of Canon recently doing the D100 today, the SL1, do you think this is a move to bring consumers more away from compacts, as in my opinion, they're dying out? I don't know. I think the problem that you've got with me is that, Alex said the other week, you know, neither of us are amateurs. So we've never been amateurs. So we don't know what we kind of really want to buy and what we want to see in a compact. I certainly don't want high-end compacts. If I'm spending £1,000 on a camera, I might as well buy something that I can equally use for work. And that's why I thought the D100 was actually quite an interesting position. If that really has shrunk the body size down, then all my lenses are going to work with it. I can take my 35mm and my 50mm round with me. That's 250 quid's worth of lenses plus 500 quid's worth of camera. And that's a day out camera. It's great. I love it to bits. Fantastic. You could even get quite a, you know, fairly pokey zoom on that with a Tamron or something like that. I think it's an interesting move. Is the compact market dead? No, I don't think it is. I think it's going to shrink. It's going to shrink massively because people are using their phones. But I think there'll still be wants out there for people to do nightclubby cameras, handbag cameras, day out cameras because they don't trust their own phone to do it. We'll see. But I think, the compact range is dying. I think the D100's interesting. I just think they've overpriced it a little bit, Adam. It could be. I kind of have another question, he says. Where's the best place to start in regards to wedding photography? It's something I've never done and really need to learn quick as I'm photographing my sister's wedding in May. Well, the first thing is never shoot family's wedding. Never shoot the wedding of anyone you actually know because it all ends up in horrible disaster potentially. Obviously, you're going to do it. Aaron Claydon asked me the other week whether he was going to do his sister's wedding, which I did advise him not to do, but I think it went okay. Where do you start in wedding photography? Well, to start off with, do bear in mind you're taking pictures of people, so it's effectively a portrait session, isn't it? So if you get into the idea of taking portraits of people, then that's a great start. That'll get you into the idea of where to crop. It'll get you into the idea of exposure, the way that light falls across round surfaces like the face and the body and what that does to light and shade on front side and back side of the body and that kind of thing. And the beauty that you've got with weddings, particularly in something like May, you're going to get probably decent weather. You're going to have a lot of opportunity around. Take a reflector, I would say, would be the big advice. Just a small one, about yay big, sort of 3 foot across. Just something where you can bounce the light up, soften the chin. Nothing worse than if the strong sunlight, particularly having a chin that's shadowed because it makes the face look really, really deep and horrible. Get yourself a circular white reflector from Calumet or something like that, or online. It'll cost you less than 15 to 20 quid. And just carry it around. Then you can just pop it open and then you can twist it up and put it back in your pocket or in your camera bag. Pop it out again and just hold it so that it just reflects a little bit of light. Don't get a metallic reflector because metallic reflectors will just blind people and you'll have loads of people with their eyes shut and stuff like that. So just get a plain white reflector and away you go. If you want to learn portrait photography, go down to your local night school or something like that and sign up for a course. Whether they're going to get you in before the end of May when you're ready to go, I don't know. But and the other thing is look online. Look at what wedding photographers are doing online. Look at the styles of the shots that they take. There's a lot of abstract stuff out there at the moment. Look for where you can use depth of field to try and create impact. So there's nothing better than at a distance you've got the bride and groom shown and then people stood in front when they all do the confetti throwing bit and they're all completely and utterly out of focus because you've gone for the a deeper shot. Anything like that. Always useful. Nice one, you, and cheers. Would help if the missus didn't phone me. No, that's switch your phone off, mate. Can you get to the church before the event with someone as a model so you can check the lighting in various places, says Teresa? You don't need to worry about that too much. You'll be fine. I mean, if you go into indoors, put it on 800 ISO, shoot about 60th of a second, aperture 2.8, you're laughing. Go and get yourself, if you've got some money to spend, Adam, I would say invest in the cheaper low f-stop lenses. So get yourself a 35mm 2.0 or a 50mm 1.8. 50mm 1.8 is superb. I just lent one to a friend to do a wedding with, and he said it was brilliant, really, really good. Well worth it. Last question, James. Here's a question for the photo show. I've been shooting with a DSLR for a long time now, but I recently got a little Fujifilm X10 to take with me when I can't be bothered to take my big camera, which is most of the time, I have to be honest. The Fujifilm shoots in 4:3, and this ratio doesn't seem to look quite right to me, perhaps because I'm more used to the 3:2 on the DSLR. I find that when I've cropped the 4:3 image back to 3:2, the images are much more pleasing. The square image, a square image works well for some things, but when it comes to a rectangle, 3:2 is a much more preferable to 4:3. Discuss. Well, there's only me here, James, so I'm afraid I won't be discussing much at all. But I've got to say, I agree, 4:3 is an awful ratio. I mean, firstly, if you look at your output from that, it doesn't look particularly great online. It's certainly not going to fit any of the frames that you've currently got. Even if you put some borders on there, you're going to have them specially made at framing shops. 4:3 is an absolutely disgusting ratio. It was great for screens, for computer screens and that kind of stuff, but it's not enough. It is close to the square size, though, as you rightly say. And if you go back to shooting not medium format stuff with the 6:4:5 ratio, but you go back to 4:4 plate for large format, you know, that was always the big thing, was going for square images. And you could always tell the expensive cameras because they had the square images that would go and be dotted around the design studios and those kind of things. I'd be tempted to look at that in my own mind and think I was going to shoot 3:3 on it and just be done with it and have a go at shooting square images, because you can always crop your square image down to a 3:2, or you could always change it to any aspect ratio you want, really. I've always fancied, because this is the silly thing, I suppose, you know, if you look at your sensor is a 35mm sensor, it's pseudo 35mm sensor, as in, you know, what it would look like. And there's an awful lot of light that comes through the lens that isn't gathered by the sensor. I would have thought, from a cost viewpoint by now, digital cameras would have worked on the idea that to get the most out of lenses and the most out of sensor size in terms of production as well, they'd make square ones, not 3:2 ones. But what do I know? I'm just the bloke who does the show. 4:3 is a disgusting ratio for photography, so don't use it. I agree. Crop it back to 3:2, hell of a crop, but I'd go to 3:3 first and see what happens. If you're talking about the X10 should shoot a very good image, so before you even start with your crop, what I'd do is run it through bicubic interpolation and resize your image so that you're up 140% of original. And at 140% of original, then you've got good detail, good quality, but you're also going to have much more availability to mess with your crop and change the detail. I'd always increase just slightly with that one. That's James. There you go, mate. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll read it out on the show. And if you've got a review, just go to iTunes and stick it in. We'll read that out as well. UK2 are the people that sponsor this podcast. They pick up all our bandwidth. They're brilliant. Please, please, please continue to support them, because without them, we are absolutely, utterly and totally knackered. They pick up all the bandwidth for all the shows, and no matter what we do, we know that we have a whole amount of bandwidth at our availability that will never go away, and we can do whatever we want with. The beauty of UK2 as well is that if you sign up with UK2 through us, we get the credit for it, they pick up our bandwidth and all that, but you still get offer codes and stuff like that. You can save an absolute fortune. So please, please, please do go to uk2.net through our website portal and then come back and use our offer codes, and then we can have a rare old time. Yes, they're wonderful. We love them to bits. Thanks very much to UK2. We'd be lost without them, most definitely. And not to put too fine a point on it, if you want to come to the bash, you better get yourself in gear, because it is not a million miles away. The British Tech Bash is going to be here on July 6th this year, and it's going to be near to where we are. It's not exactly at my house anymore, because we got a bit busy last year, it has to be said, and we're expecting a few hundred people this time as opposed to the 100 that we had last time. Tickets are £20 per person. All you need to do is go to britishtechnetwork.com and click on the ticket purchase. Anyone who's under 12 years of age comes free of charge. That's not an issue. Kids, obviously, free. There's going to be loads for kids to do there. There's places you can go and draw and do finger painting, that kind of stuff. There's a big garden outside, so if the weather's half decent, we'll be fine. And also, I'm going to take down the canopies that we had last year as well, so even if it rains, we can still get out. There'll be a pork bash, you know, the pork roast and pig roast, and there'll be loads of salad and that kind of stuff. And we're still looking for a person to provide the beer, but we'll get there. If you want to come to the curry as well, there's a banner underneath that, and you need to just type in there, click on that one, and pay separately for that. That is a deposit for your curry place. It's not going to get you a free curry for 10 quid. That'll come off your bill at the end of the night. So, but that's it. Tickets are on sale. You heard it here first. You can get them now. See you all there July 6th. Back again in 2 weeks. No photo show next week because I'm going to have some time off with the kids because of the school holidays. But we're back the following week and we'll go through it all as normal. If you've got a question for us, send it in and we'll read it out. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.